Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 22 of NML Crossing, and this is a little bit later in the morning recording than I'm used to. You ever have one of those days where you just can't seem to wake up? I don't know what's going on with me today, but I try to get all the, you know, podcasting and writing stuff out of the way before, you know, before the family wakes up. I try to get that stuff done before the day actually begins. And today, for whatever reason, I am just dragging ass. So let's hop on in. Let's hop on in. Today we've got a pretty special one, and I've got a couple of extra segments here that I wanted to include for some supplemental information. So let's get started. We're talking about Batman, Shadow of the Bat number 76 today. This had a June 1998 cover date. The story is called Aftershock, The Gauntlet. Written by Alan Grant, with pencils by Mark Buckingham. Inks, Wayne Foucher. Colors, Pam Rambo. Android images. Letters, Bill Oakley. Edits, Gore Finkel O'Neill. Cover price, $1.95. Now, this one has a very bizarre cover. Like, if you see this cover, it's like, it's very, very green, and there's, like, psychotic-looking people. Like, just people with crazed looks in their eyes. And I thought it was like, oh, maybe this will be, like, a looting issue, or maybe this is just, like, a generic people-are-panicking sort of issue. But no, as we work our way through, we're going to find out exactly why these people have such crazed looks in their eyes. So let's get to it. We open with Batman working his way to a certain destination via the decimated streets of Gotham City. Along the way, he runs afoul of an attempted holdup at a gun shop. We got a whole bunch of out-of-shape gangbanger types. They got a pair of National Guardsmen all tied up. Threats are being made, all that happy stuff, right? Now, before these goons can do any looting, our man swoops in and delivers a whopper of a dropkick, which scatters the scums like it was a break shot at the pool table. Meanwhile, we pop over to Batman's eventual destination, and it's a mansion of a friend of his. Well, more of an associate than a friend. It's a dude named Ralph Jones. Now, the fella just happened to be having a birthday on the very day that the very bad thing happened. What's more, it was right in the middle of his birthday party when the clock struck 7:03. We're reminded here that this quake happened 14 days ago, which I think is the same timeline we'd heard in Detective 722, so maybe this is the same day? Maybe it doesn't matter. Anyway, Ralph Jones's mansion sunk into the ground, and so all the attendees are now trapped. Spirits, as you might imagine, ain't exactly high, and they are about to get worse. Because, well, these people are hungry. And yeah, this is going exactly where you think it is. Oh, also, nobody's talking about the birthday boy. I wonder why that could be. Anyway, back to Batman. He KOs the creeps and he unties the feds, one of whom draws his piece and takes aim at one of the baddies. Now, if you remember, we are under that limited martial law, wherein all looters and attempted looters are to be shot on sight. And, well, that's pretty much what this fella intends to do. Batman convinces him otherwise, by reasoning with him and also by scaring the bejesus out of him. The National Guards decide to just call it into HQ and report that they've got some prisoners needing picked up. Back to Ralph's, where we're about to witness a very inconvenient conversation. They all know they're hungry. They all know it's unlikely they'll be rescued anytime soon. And they all know they're going to have to do something. And, well, that something will require a sacrifice. Now, one of the yuppies suggests just waiting it out and eating the first person who passes out or dies. This idea doesn't go over all that well, because they, in their eyes, they'd just be eating the weakest person. Which, I mean, in times like this, does it matter? I don't know. Now, they're talking an awful lot here, but still, nobody's talking about old Jonesy. Gotta be a reason for that, huh? Anyway, back to Batman. He's still trudging his way through the wreckage toward Ralph Jones's mansion. Now, he worries that his city is going to wind up becoming a charnel pit, which I totally had to look up. No, it's basically a pit or a building where skeletal remains are kept. Back to Ralph's, and it's time for a party game. It's a really fun one, too. It's the one where you draw straws to see who gets eaten. That's one of my favorites. Some Ringo Starr-looking goofball named David winds up drawing the short straw. His wife, like, freaks out, starts sobbing and hugging him. But, looks like he is going to be the sacrifice. Back to Batman, and we get, we get more trudging. We see a lot of dead bodies, a lot of wreckage, a lot of ruin. And then he winds up getting attacked by, of all things, a South American vulture. He gets clawed in the face, but a quick dab of bat coagulant stops the bleeding. Back to Ralph's. Our man David is given a bottle of brandy to get himself all nice and loose before they cave his skull in, or blow his brains out, or slit his wrists, or however they're planning on nixing him. It isn't made clear here. And, well, it'd be kind of a moot point anyway, since old Ringo decides he's not going to go out without a fight. He smashes the brandy bottle and he wields the shards at his would-be devourers. Back to Batman, who realizes that he's definitely getting warmer in his search for Ralph's place. You see, old Jonesy had himself an exotic private zoo, hence the South American dirt bird. And also the Black Panther that's about to attack him. Not that Black Panther. Batman finds himself attacked by said big cat. Now, back to the party, where Dead Man Walking David is holding off a gaggle of yuppies with the busted brandy bottle. One man approaches, tries to reason with him, and gets his throat slit with the shards of the glass here, so Davies done killed a man. Back topside, Batman batarangs the living crap out of the Black Panther, and it would actually be humorous without the context. Like, this entire scene looks like something straight out of the Silver Age. It's just like rang after rang after rang hitting this cat in the face and head, and the cat looks not angry, it just looks annoyed, like perturbed, like, what are you doing? Finally, it runs away, and since Alan Grant is so good with his danglers, I wonder if we'll ever see it again. Maybe, maybe not. I hope so, though. I hope, like, we're in episode, like, 83 of this show, and it's like, hey, that Panther's back, but who knows? I'm not even sure Alan Grant will still be here at that point, but moving on. By now, Batman is pretty certain that he's at the right place to start digging. And so he radios into Oracle so that she can send a rescue chopper to his location. He then finds his way to an elevator entrance and begins his descent. Now in the down below, the partygoers are, well, a bit beside themselves over what just happened, which, yeah, I guess that stands to reason, doesn't it? A Batman shows himself, and poor old David is like, dude, you're too late. He then confesses to killing the other guy. Batman tells him to snap out of it and get to climbing so they can all be rescued. He then turns to another attendee to ask if Ralph is anywhere around, to which he is told that, well, they killed and ate Ralph a week ago. Oh well. Now this takes us to our closing scene. We've got the attendees being airlifted out of there while Batman stays behind. And he thinks about how this whole situation would almost be better if the Quake Master actually were behind it. You know, that way there'd be someone to blame, someone to point the finger to, someone to direct anger toward. But, as we've covered time and again, this is bigger than any bad guy. And so, all the Batman can do is scream. And he does. He screams here. He's just, like, exhausted, frustrated. He just screams, and his voice reverberates throughout the crater that he's standing in and into the city itself. We close out with him vanishing off to do more of whatever it is he can do for the city he cares about so much. But that's where we leave it. Next time out, we're going to be talking Robin 54. It's the return of Spoiler. Or at least that's what the cover shows us. I guess we'll find that out next time. But how about we talk about this? I gotta say, before we even get into the, you know, the meat of the story here, I tell you what, Shadow is becoming, like, quite the, like, dark horse highlight for me during this project. When I started, you know, compiling my read list and need list for this program, I saw how many issues of Shadow we had, and I was just like, oh man, that's gonna suck. You know? First, it was like, wow, Shadow was still a thing. And second, it was like, oh, this is, I kind of assumed that it was going to be like second or third tier, like the afterthought book, you know, just page fill, you know? And I, you know, since we're going to be looking at like 20 some odd issues of this over the course of the next several months, I couldn't be happier to be wrong. You know, my initial impression was incorrect, and that's a damn good thing. So now this issue, this one was a bit different, wasn't it? Here we touch on a very inconvenient truth about these kinds of situations. Situations that have happened in real life and will probably happen again. And I tell you, this is one truth that really, 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 really gets under my skin. You know, I've got very odd triggers here. I consider myself a mostly desensitized guy. You know, I don't get affected by much. I don't get rattled or scared by, you know, garden variety horror. But cannibals freak me out. They really freak me out. I can't put myself into their mindset. And I mean, then you hear those stories, like the ones that really get to me are like the ones with like the willing victims. Like, what was that? Armin Mibez, whatever he is. Like that whole story, that creeps me out. Really, really, really gets to me. So I'm finding, you know, in analyzing comics this way, my odd triggers are cannibals and mushrooms growing out of things. That grosses me out. Anybody else supremely freaked out by cannibals? Maybe it's just me. Anyway, this was a very Alan Grant sort of story, wasn't it? You know, we get our sort of kind of flowery narration captions during Batman's hunt for the mansion. And then we get to brush up against the psychological bent of, I suppose, survivability. The trapped yuppies, they weren't the most interesting bunch, but I mean, this was from a time before decompressed writing was the go-to method of creating comics. So, to its benefit or detriment, we just don't get too much time to get to know them. Yeah, I mean, not that we really needed to, I suppose. We get pretty much everything we need to know. However, there is a question of pacing. Trying to think of a way to say this here, and I hate going to my go-tos. I hate going to the Chris Chestnuts here, where I just say, like, it feels like they ran out of pages. I think that's one of my more common pacing complaints, or at least the way I phrase my pacing complaints. But it is that. It does feel like we got a whole lot of story and then it just ended. And you know, we're actually going to be talking about a review of Shadow of the Bat from Wizard Magazine in a little bit. And that pretty much says the same exact thing. The stories build and build and build, and then they end quickly, abruptly, and very formulaic. Now, I don't know that that's all that great or fair a criticism, but I can totally understand where it comes from. Now, while Jonesy's party is the meat and potatoes of the issue, it wasn't the highlight for me. The highlight for me, and I mean, this is, the character focus is some of the best stuff that I've seen so far. I mean, we've talked about the wonderful, under the subterranean stream scene that Chuck Dixon wrote, where Batman is just running scenarios through his head here, and how just prioritizing. And, you know, the Bat mantle itself is secondary to everything else. I love how we're exploring the mindset of Batman in this very odd, very unique situation he finds himself in. The final few pages of this issue were definitely the highlight. You know, Batman just screaming in frustration. Not just because it was a great bit, but it's also because we don't get to see this Batman very often, at least as far as I can recall. And I very clearly have some holes in my bat history, and we're going to touch upon those a bit in the mailbag section. But I do have holes in my bat history, but the Batman that I've known for most of my life has always been depicted as the coolest, smartest, most put-together guy in any room that he enters. Like, he's almost presented as being more alien than the actual DC Universe aliens. Here, however, we get a great reminder that he's not. You know, he's human. And there's limits to what any human can do in a situation like this, even a human like Batman. And I feel like we've all been in situations where things are out of our control, and it just seems like, you know, it's just a crap storm, and it just won't stop raining on you, and you just, the only thing you can do is scream. You need to get it out before you can start planning to, you know, make your way back. I think that's a very human and relatable sort of reaction to any sort of trauma. It's just, all you can do is scream. Now, overall, I mean, while this was just another search and rescue issue, it was one that I got a whole lot out of. And while, yeah, I am hopeful that we're getting toward the end of the formula, the search and rescue formula, if we're not, I hope we get more stories like this one. You know, minus the cannibals, I guess. But I think that's about all I got to say. I'm still really enjoying Bucky's artwork here. It's weird, in the letters pages here, people are a fair bit critical of his work, and I just don't see it. You know, I've always been a fan. He's got a lot of Bocciolo in him, and Bocciolo is in my top three artists. I just love his work. So maybe I'm more than a little bit biased. Also, the letters page here, like I said, the last time we discussed an issue of Shadow, I recommend these letters pages because they are, they're weird, they're personal, and there's people from the right and the left complaining to Alan Grant for being on the left or the right. It's just so, so bizarre. Anyway, let's get into some supplemental stuff here. We're going to talk about an issue of Wizard magazine. This is Wizard issue 81, May 1998 cover date, and we do get some Cataclysm here. The thumbing off column. Now, this is a column where Wizard gives thumbs ups and thumbs downs. Thumbs ups. Is that even a way? I don't know. They give thumbs up and thumbs down to various things going on in the comic biz. And Cataclysm gets a thumbs up. They say, "This is one of the most shocking and riveting crossovers the Bat Office has ever done. The new Batquake storyline is a giant risk because of the potential long-lasting effects in destroying Gotham City and even the Batcave. We want to see more crossovers with this much impact on heroes." And I mean, we've been talking about how gutsy this storyline is from the start. It seems, it's like unthinkable. I don't think they could ever do that today. Everything is so corporate and shiny and glossy and hospital foody that I don't think we'd ever get something this, you know, catastrophic happening to any of our heroes anymore. Now, in a true sign of the times here, that same month, Wizard gives thumbs downs to the bloated JLA lineup and the lack of continuity in Marvel Comics, which makes me wonder if this wasn't written a little bit more recently than 1998, like maybe like now-ish or a year ago, because JLA ain't a thing right now. Anyway, we got a long-form review for Shadow of the Bat issues 65 through 73 in Wizard's report card section. And I mentioned this earlier, but Wizard don't much care for Shadow, it seems. They give the entire run here a C- and say, "This bat just doesn't fly." Worth noting, they do seem to really dig issue 73, which was part one of Cataclysm. And they call it, quote, "an awesome setup to the long-awaited Gotham City earthquake tale. Seeing the almost mythical city in Wayne Manor crumble in only a few short panels rates as one of the gutsiest moments we've seen in a long time. Let's hope the rest of the story keeps up the pace." Now, as for Wizard's complaints, their main complaint seems to be Shadow's inability to stick the landing, and how everything seems to wrap up a bit too conveniently, which is kind of what I was saying earlier here. It's like build, 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 and then end. Just like a very, very clean and convenient end. Now, if we look at the top 100, we've actually got our first slew of Cataclysm books included here. So this is where we will start our, I guess, our baseline for the ratings and the rankings. Now, the top Bat book is Batman. Batman 553 was the 32nd book of the top 100. Book 37 is Detective Comics 720, Right after that in 38 is Nightwing 19. Go down to 42 for Shadow of the Bat 73, which is odd since that was part one. You'd think it would be a little higher, but I guess not. Shadow was kind of B or C tier, I guess. 44, Catwoman 56. 47, Robin 52. The 49th best-selling book was Blackgate Isle of Men number 1, our first one-shot. And 56 was Asriel number 40, which is shockingly high for Asriel, I think. Now, the Cataclysm titles, it's worth noting, are bolded in the list, which means they've been given a footnote, a highlight footnote. And that footnote reads, "It was the first Batman crossover in a year and a half, and it worked. Cataclysm, the earthquake-based Batman crossover that destroyed Wayne Manor, the Batcave, and most of Gotham City, gave the Bat titles a minimum 5% increase and rocketed up lower-tier titles like Asriel and Catwoman. Guess something good can come of complete disaster." Finally, all of these Cataclysm issues are included in the Wizard Price Guide. They are all still listed as being worth cover price so far. We're going to keep track of that as well here to see what the hot books were. We're going to get to a certain one-shot somewhere down the line that I think Wizard will inflate very, very quickly. And there will be several higher-end first appearances coming up, so we'll keep track of that and see what the market looked like then. We could talk about how the market looks for them right now. Maybe we will do that eventually, because maybe we'll find that interesting, or hopefully you'll find it half as interesting as I do. I don't know, but we will start tracking these prices as we work our way through the crossover. Now, I want to do one more segment before we get to the letters here, and this is a segment I'm calling Flashback Land. It's a term I use whenever we go to flashback in a book, but here we're going to go to flashback in real life. We're heading into my old stomping grounds of Usenet, which apparently is going away in about a month. In about a month, Usenet was acquired by Google Groups, and as of mid to late February, no new posts will be allowed to be made. You'll still be able to read the archives, thankfully, because I do get a lot out of that, and I think that's a real fun look into the past, but it'll be the end of an era. No new Usenet posts, even though 99.9% of Usenet posts now are for porn. So, not about what you want them to be about. Anyway, in Usenet, we have a transcript from the Cataclysm AOL chat from February 14th, 1998 at 1 a.m. Now, AOL, of course, I shouldn't have to explain what AOL was, because AOL is still kind of a thing. It's kind of a news aggregate, I suppose, like an MSN or a Yahoo homepage. But back in the day, it was kind of the be-all, end-all for normal folk to access the sorta kind of internet. I remember when I started on AOL, it was like AOL 1.3 or something like that. And it was like it wasn't even in color. It was like a DOS-based whatever it was. It was very, very bizarre. It quickly, became what it would become. But I do remember how just ancient it felt, even in the time, and having to pay by the hour. That was bizarre. It was like $4 an hour to use AOL back in the day before internet became the necessity that it would eventually become. Anyway, DC had its own little corner of AOL, just like Marvel did, just like Wizard did, places I used to hang out all the time. I really didn't frequent the DC one because around this time I wasn't all that into DC. So I'd be on the Marvel one, I'd be on the Wizard one especially. That one was probably the most fun because, I don't know, it just felt more fun. I remember setting up a lot of overpower card trades in the Wizard chat room and in Instant Message, which was a very fun thing to do back in the long ago. I never played the game. You remember Overpower, right? The Marvel collectible card game. That eventually became like DC and Image as well, but I just liked collecting them. I wanted to have a full set because that's kind of what I do. I never played. I think I might have tried playing, and it just, yeah, it wasn't for me. I can't sit still long enough to play a tabletop game, I suppose. Anyway, with all that having been said here, some of the tidbits from this chat. Valentine's Day, 1998. Kelly Jones is off Batman indefinitely, and upcoming pencilers will include Klaus Janson, John Beatty, and Norm Breyfogle. And, hey, Batman's no longer going to be focusing on supernatural stories, which, da-doy, I mean, we're in the earthquake now. We also hear that Robin will be appearing more in the flagship book. Here's an interesting one. Denny O'Neil reveals that the Bat Office is currently discussing bringing Harley Quinn into the regular continuity. I wonder if that'll ever happen. Now, in a true sign that the more things change, the more they stay the same, there are a lot of comments on these threads as well. I'm not going to go through all of them, of course. I'm not going to go through any of them, actually. But regarding the Harley Quinn news, pretty much every reply is hoping that they dig into her sexuality, which she's not even in the universe yet. I don't know. And it's a reminder of the rose-colored glasses I sometimes wear when I think about the old internet and how... Like, I'll talk about how social media, where, like, people always want to be, like, the smartest person. They always want to have, like, the most unique viewpoint and the most obscure knowledge. And I always thought to myself, like, I wasn't always like this. Yeah, it was. It was always like this. If I had a nickel for every post that started with actually or I think I'd be recording this program from a golden yacht somewhere. There's a lot of actuallys and ums in even these, you know, pre-2000 posts. It's disheartening a little bit. More news here. The Birds of Prey ongoing will launch in the fall. And this is true. Birds of Prey number one will have a January 1999 cover date. Though the first year and a half of the book will be mostly Black Canary globe-trotting and time-trotting, so it won't be tying in any with No Man's Land. Birds of Prey will tie in with many, if not all, of the next slew of Bat Office crossovers, though. It's announced here that Nightwing will be a recurring character. It's been forever since I read those early issues, so I don't know if that's true or not. I do know, of course, he will show up in Birds of Prey number 8, and that's a pretty big deal. We got an all-Dixon crossover upcoming here in the pages of Green Arrow 134 through 135. The Detective Comics of that month, Robin of that month, and Nightwing of that month. And, of course, it is that Brotherhood of the Fist, which we will not be dealing with. There's talk of an Anarchy ongoing by Alan Grant to be launching in the fall. And, well, it doesn't come out in the fall. It comes out a little bit later than that. June 1999 is the cover date of the first issue. And it opens with Batman kicking Anarchy out of Gotham and takes place largely in Washington, D.C., The eighth and final issue will take him back to Gotham City, though the story is set after No Man's Land, so he gets to sit out the entire thing, and that might be a good thing for us. We might look at the first issue when we get there just to see him get kicked out. Probably not. That'll probably just be a meanwhile aside sort of thing. There's a quote about this issue on the wiki here. It says, "The title was expressively political, philosophical, and thematic, but ended as both a critical and commercial failure." And yeah, I could see that. I feel like Anarchy is one of those characters you really need to work on your subtlety if you're using a character like Anarchy, because I think it could be easily spun into just real, for lack of a better term, impotent ranting. When you get into politics and philosophy with a character like that, I don't know. Anyway, the last bit of news we got here is that there's going to be a Batman 80-page special on its way, and yes, there is. It comes out over the summer, but does not tie in any way to No Man's Land. Now, that's all the Usenetting we're going to do for this episode here. I hope you dug this. I really like this kind of stuff. It's just really, well, it's not so much informative. It's just fun. It's fun. It's a reminder of days gone by here and how... Yeah, I mentioned how similar the internet is today as it was then, but it's also different in that, like, we didn't have access to creators and editors all the time back then. So these little chats that were held on, you know, AOL keywords were special. It might have actually been like the sweet spot in as far as the sort of relationship readers should have with the creators, you know, because now it's like, we're probably a little too close, and they're a little too close to us. But I don't know. If you dug this, let me know. If you check out Usenet and there's anything in there you want me to include, please send it my way, and we'll do that. I think this could be a fun little thing we do every now and again. Not every episode, just maybe a handful of times a month. We'll take a look at we'll take the temperature of the internet fandom of the day. Now let's head into the NML bag before we cut on out of here. And we've got a little back and forth here. We're going to start with our friend Chris Yu talking about Batman 555 and a scene in particular that I think I showed my ignorance of the books of the age here. Where Chris says, I think this might have been the first time Tim becoming Batman was ever mentioned. It would certainly lead to other stories featuring Tim as Batman other than Battle for the Cowl, most notably in the Titans of Tomorrow storyline. Now, I did make a big deal out of the Tim-Batman relationship and how it seemed like he was always intended to be the heir apparent from the start. Like the relationship with Bruce and Dick and Bruce and even Jason were different than the relationship between Bruce and Tim. A lot of that comes from the fact that I didn't really get to know Tim until, like, Young Justice and Teen Titans, the Geoff Johns run on Titans. So to me, it was always like this foregone conclusion that Tim is being groomed to be Batman, and it was always just that way. So when I talked about this getting mentioned in that Ratcatcher issue, I didn't realize it was the first time that anybody had mentioned that. I thought that this was just the assumption, and this is just Batman making it clear to Tim himself. Now Chris continues, it's always been assumed that Dick would take over for Batman eventually, but Dick had spent a long time growing out of the Batman shadow and becoming his own man. The fact that at this point in history he's made himself the hero of Bloodhaven, and literally moved away from Batman and Gotham makes Dick ever becoming Batman seem even less likely. The fact that Bruce had to step away from the mantle of the Batman recently has to put the idea of who will replace him and continue his mission as front and center in his mind. Tim is the perfect candidate at this time. Beginning to lead Tim down the path to becoming Batman is something Bruce needs to do, since his mortality has become more evident to him since Nightfall. But of course, all of that would go out the window once Damian shows up and became the heir apparent and destined to become Batman. And yeah, I totally agree with all that. It's just, I guess I'm showing my ignorance to this era of Bat books. Damian as Batman, I think they did that I think it was Batman 666, actually. I think that was like a future story featuring Damian as Batman. And I'm pretty sure I covered that on the blog, but it's been years. So I don't remember whether or not I dug that. Though it was Morrison, so I probably enjoyed it at least a little bit. But it's funny having these conversations about who will take over, right? Because back in the day, that was an actual concern. That was actually a question. You know, if Hal Jordan goes nuts, who's taking over, right? If Batman's broken, who's taking over? If Superman dies, who's taking over? I miss those days because now it's just like, hey, let's throw a spider costume on 7,000 people and give them each their own ongoing series. Let's have 8 Captain Americas and 4 Batmen and 17 Supermen. It's just, there are no stakes anymore. And like I always say, it's about the emblem on the costume more than anything else nowadays. It's what can we brand? How many things can we put out with this logo on the cover? It's a shame, but I mean, that might just be the reality of the comics industry now. You got to do whatever you can to make people believe that they're buying key issues that are going to be worth something someday. I don't know. Anyway, Chris continues, I've been drawn in on some of the Black Label books, most notably Danger Street, that used all of the disparate characters from First Issue Special. They're each in their own continuity. Everything you need to know is contained in the story. No previous knowledge necessary, and any previous knowledge should be left at the door. They're just stories. No alternative Earths necessary. Totally out of continuity. And yeah, that I have been buying Danger Street because, I mean, I pushed and promoted First Issue Special before it was cool. When they announced Danger Street, I sent out a very passive-aggressive tweet, I think. It was not a good time for me, and I was just kind of a dick about it. I tweeted out a link to my First Issue Special reviews, and I commented like, hey, I guess it's cool to like First Issue Special now, and put something in there like, if you want to find out what the books were actually about instead of just lol lady cop, click this link. It was not my best moment, but Tom King retweeted it, so I guess that counts for something. But yeah, I have kept up buying Danger Street. Haven't read it, Haven't read it. I'm not a huge Tom King fan, but couldn't not support these characters from First Issue Special. Now, our friend Eric writes in response to Chris. He says, I agree with Chris Yu that this is the first time Tim being Batman is mentioned, and it seems like this is the best option in this era of comics. Even Ra's al Ghul refers to Tim as Detective in the Red Robin series. But over time, after I believe it was Rebirth, we start to see Tim not wanting to become Batman, and he gave his reasons why. That's when it appears Damian is the only successor because no one else wants to do it. Like a lot of people, we assumed Dick Grayson would become the next Batman, but over the years, he's been shown stepping in to take Bruce's place temporarily, but always seems to comment that he doesn't want to be Batman permanently. Even back in the Golden Age, when he's a grown adult, he still wears an updated Robin costume. I'm not sure he ever became the Batman in that era, the Golden Age, that is. To which Chris Yu replies, he wore a modified Batman costume in his first appearance as an adult in the Silver Age. In the Earth 2, Dick Grayson did not become Batman. He was Robin up until his death in Crisis. Earth 2, Bruce Wayne continued as Batman even in semi-retirement until he died in the costume. I'm pretty sure the only time Dick Grayson ever willingly succeeded Bruce and took over the mantle of Batman was in the John Byrne miniseries, Superman Batman Generations. And that did not turn out so well for our man Grayson. And I've never read Generations, mostly because I'm not a fan of Elseworlds, and John Byrne at the time was not my cup of tea around then, so I did not read that. So yeah, I never knew, and I'm assuming we're talking about the Golden Age or the Earth 2 Robin, I suppose, becoming Batman. That is the Earth 2 Dick Grayson, I should say, becoming Batman. Never read that. Don't have a whole lot of interest in reading it, but I definitely did enjoy Dick's stint as Batman pre-Flashpoint. I thought that was a lot of fun. Having that whole era was so much fun, and adds to the shame in that they flushed it. The Justice League at the time was basically the Titans graduated. You know, we had Donna Troy, Cyborg, Nightwing. It was just the Titans had graduated to the, you know, the big leagues, and it was a lot of fun. And I also loved the Dick Batman with Damian Robin. That was a blast because it was like they totally flipped the script on the relationship between the two, where usually we have Batman as the brooding stoic character and Robin as the sort of bright, peppy, bantery sort of character. And here we had the reverse, where Batman, as you know, Dick Grayson as Batman, was this happier sort of guy, and the Damian Wayne Robin was kind of a dick. I thought it was just such a fun dynamic, and it's a shame that we lost it as quickly as we did. But I think that is where we will leave the mailbag for today. I want to thank the fellas for writing in. I always enjoy hearing from you, and of course I want to hear from you as well. If you want to be part of the show, please, please feel free to write in. You can find me all those different ways. WeirdComicsHistory@gmail.com. Where else am I? Chris is on InfiniteEarths.com. I told you, I'm tired today. I don't know what's going on. Chris is on InfiniteEarths.com. 90s X-Men on Facebook. Ace Comics on the other stuff. I don't know if we still have the voicemail from X-Lapsed. I haven't checked. I couldn't even tell you what the number was. Oh, boy. Wow, I really... I lost track of a lot of things over the past little while. Anyway, like I said, Chris is on InfiniteEarths.com, WeirdComicsHistory@gmail.com. I invite and encourage anybody who wants to write in to do so. But before I babble myself even sillier, let's take this one home. I would like to thank you all so much for sharing some of your day with me today. And until next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it breaks, starting over when the story's got an astounding twist. You've read